The numbers told the story. They always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Tuesday edition of A Numbers Game. Sorry, haters. No Gil Alexander's Matt Brown here for the next 4 days. Kelly Bidlin over here to my right. We're proudly presented by DraftKings Sportsbook. Coming to you from the D in downtown Las Vegas. Great show with us. Drew Densick going to be on the phone with us. Kai McKeon from Three Man Weave. Talk some college basketball. We're going to talk some soccer.
The champions!
Grass hockey here on the show
grass
today.
Hockey.
Yeah, we're going to talk some grass hockey here on the show today as well. Paul Carr will be here to talk some of that. We're going to get into the final thoughts here of the Super Bowl as well. Hit on some of the big news from last night. And Kelly, I mean, I think the big news from last night, which I'm going to get your opinion. Of course, the esteemed host, one of the esteemed hosts of Hardwood Handicappers here on the network at VSiN, but you know, Wimby goes triple-double, and one of the doubles as part of the triple was blocked.
Yeah.
First rookie to do it since David Robinson. You know, we're talking about a million years ago with all of this. But, you know, listen, it's because I want to ask you, is it because this team is so bad that we are not just completely losing our minds about Wimby and the fact that he is living up to every single thing that we thought that he was going to be coming into this? Because I have a group of friends, and you probably have a group of friends who are, you would consider sports fans, maybe not necessarily hardcore NBA fans, but sports fans in general. They follow what's going on in the sports world. They're trying to keep up with everything across the board. So, you know, they don't sound stupid at the water cooler. And I still hear things about when LeBron has a big night, and I still hear things about when Kevin Durant has a big night, and I still weirdly, you know, they're kind of in that central time zone. So anytime Luka goes nuts, you know, I hear about Luka or the Luka Kyrie kind of 1-2 punch there. But when Wimby does something, unless it is something like this, and even then I was the first person to bring it up and not the people in kind of the group chat and stuff. It's the first time we hear about it. Is it just because of the environment that he's in where it's like limited minutes, the team is absolutely horrible, going nowhere? You even have Pop just literally talking about, yeah, we're not going to play him very much because we're not any good this year. You know, I'm just wondering, because with what we are seeing on the floor in these limited minutes and even in these losses over and over and over again, is a kid that is living up to all of the hype that we talked about heading into the season.
Yeah, I think I think you're exactly right. I think it's very comparable to Luka Doncic, right? It's, we want to see Luka have these crazy nights and go off. He puts up these big numbers, but he's on the Mavericks, and we've seen, and different from Victor Wembanyama, we've seen this story over and over again, kind of in Luka's time there, where it's, we're kind of rushing to give him an MVP award, but you're like, I can't give an MVP award to a guy who's on a near 500 team. And I think that when Wemby first came in, those first few big games, right? Like, they were all the highlights in the fall, and we saw that. I think it's been the allure is kind of, you know, gone away a little bit of I've never seen anything like this before. Now people have seen it for a little while. And yeah, I think now it's okay. Well, he's on a team that's really, really, really bad. And there's no chance of them making the playoffs. So I think sometimes it does get overlooked, but you see a game like last night and it's insane. I mean, you're talking about numbers that nobody, you know, people haven't put, we're talking since the 90s with Olajuwon and David Robinson and what he did in that game last night. And, you know, at what point, I don't think it's if, it's when are we going to see a quadruple-double from this guy? Like, that is going to happen at some point.
You look at this and I see this guy out here, and it's hard to even imagine how young he is, what he has been dealing with over the last year and a half of like knowing you're going to be the number one overall pick in the NBA, knowing what the expectations are going to be for you, and then to go out and actually do it on the court night in, night out. I just don't know if enough is really being made of it. And maybe it's because we heard about him for so long. And maybe it is because we just almost expected it. Like you're even talking about with Luka with that. It's like, maybe we just almost expected it, but it's not easy.
It's not
to
easy
to do this.
Yeah, to keep doing it.
How many first round guys have come into the NBA and not been impactful in their first couple of seasons? Like, grow into kind of the role. Instead, this guy is a superstar from day one out there on the court. And I don't know. I know in the bubble we talk about it, but you don't hear it outside of the bubble. You don't hear it from just the casual sports fan.
I mean, going back to one thing you said, I think it's a scary thought that, and I've agreed with this all along, that Pop has brought, and the Spurs have brought brought him along slowly too. Mm-hmm. Those minutes have increased as the season has gone on. Like, that is something they have been very vigilant of, and I think it's the right thing, right? He is so young. You don't want to screw this up early. Like, he is used to play, was used to playing in Europe, playing less minutes per game. You want to get him into that flow. And really, what's, you don't want to burn him out early in his career when he's not surrounded by good pieces. So I respect what they're doing. And because of that, Matt, like, is why I made, this was 3-4 weeks ago where I was hitting Chet Holmgren a couple times in Rookie of the Year, because he's playing on a team that's battling for the number one seed in the Western Conference. And now you look at those odds today and Wemby's out to -500, and it's hard to argue with. The increased minutes, he's putting up games like that last night. Like, the stat lines are going to probably be overwhelming. And I don't know if Chet's going to stand a chance.
The Super Bowl was the most watched television broadcast of all time this past year, of this past Sunday. 123.4 million people tuned in to watch the Super Bowl, a 7% increase in the largest viewing audience of all time. And you see this, Kelly, and I don't care what anybody says. If you don't believe that there is a Taylor Swift effect to this, then you've lost your mind, because there were enough households that tuned in that were not sports fans at all, because their 12-year-old, 14-year-old, 15-year-old daughter, or even son. I mean, listen, she's popular amongst everyone. Let's not pretend that she's only popular amongst young females. Tuned into this game and get a 7% bump in what was going on. Because listen, sure, you had Mahomes and Kelce on the Chiefs. It is not a hugely popular team on the 49ers. Yeah, I mean, it's a very good football team, but their quarterback is a no-name guy to the vast majority of people who aren't, again, in the sports bubble. Sure, Christian McCaffrey is known amongst sports people. It is not like he is an incredible superstar in just the sports world writ large. And then you go into all their role players. Most people couldn't pick Brandon Ayuk or George Kittle or Debo Samuel out of a lineup. And so if you don't think that Taylor Swift had an effect on the fact that this was the most watched broadcast in history, I might add, in history, we just have to deal with it. We have to understand that the most popular human being on planet Earth decided to embrace the NFL. And Kelly, for me and you who make our living in sports, I'm all for it. I'm down. The more eyeballs, the better. So bring it on again. Hey, guess what? Someone else start dating someone else. Can someone start dating Lady Gaga or something? Like, let's make a triumphant here of all these popular guys dating these superstars. I mean, I'm down with it, man.
Yeah, it is massive, massive numbers. What, ratings wise, you have to go back to the moon landing, right? Yeah. That's number of people. Yeah. It's far exceeded. You go back to ratings. It's the moon landing. Literally, this past Super Bowl and the moon landing.
Yeah, okay. It's just, I mean, come on. There is an effect here. Just call a spade. It is what it is. And we can move on. We don't have to be angry because they flipped the camera to someone who, again, is the most popular human on planet Earth. It's going to happen. It's going to happen.
I knew I was, I'm getting old, was when I was seeing the videos of them partying after the Super Bowl. And I'm like, man, that game was so long. Like, I'd be so exhausted after that. Like, I can't even imagine.
But then you'd see all those zeros in your bank account and realize, I'm expected to party. Yeah, I'm expected to party with all this. We also see that he's the most Super Bowl handle in Nevada history. $185.6 million. It was a 3.7% hold for a $6.8 million win for the books here in Nevada. Good on you. Keep the lights on. I know we keep it going here in this great state. But again, the most wagered on a Super Bowl ever as well this week. I mean, it was just... It was overall, Kelly, to me, a massive win for Nevada / Las Vegas, mainly Las Vegas. I mean, look, this isn't Casino. This isn't The Godfather. Michael Corleone isn't taking out Mo Green, and you're not landing airplanes on the fairway at Las Vegas Country Club. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is a thriving metropolis, a sports hub here. We have 320 days of sunshine a year, 30 casinos up and down the strip, two dozen more here downtown, 150,000 hotel rooms that book 46 million nights a year, world-class shows, whether you want Cirque or you want comedy or you want the weirdness of Absinthe and whatever, or you want to catch some live music with, by the way, world headliners just happening up and down the strip every single night. Hundreds of restaurants that you can go to that you will never get food like that in the town that you live in.
No.
The best collection of nightlife that you will ever see as well. And if you want to get off the strip, world-class golf, some of the best golf courses you'll ever play in your life. There's hiking. I mean, I've done it a couple of times, but they tell me it's amazing. You know, all of the hiking, the craziness, and all of this.
I did it once.
It is, and oh yeah, it's home to the world's largest sports book and some of the greatest viewing experiences of sports that you will ever get in your entire life. No place on earth is more well-equipped than Las Vegas to host the biggest event in all of sports, and I want all of the haters out there that wrote all of the articles saying what a disaster that this was going to be, to come back hat in hand and say, you know what? I was wrong. Yeah, one light pole got knocked over and there was a couple of fist fights in the casinos. Guess where there's also fist fights? In every bar in America every single week when there's varying fan bases in there, because fans are idiots when they get too many cocktails in them. So it was a massive, massive win for this city, for Las Vegas, for everything that went on. And I can't wait for the next one. And the next one's going to be pretty soon.
Mike Palm said it on Sunday, I believe, that he thought the Super Bowl should be here every one out of every 3 years.
Yeah,
I think it should be something like that kind of rotation. It was for as poorly handled as the F1 might have been. Everything you just said, absolutely correct. Like, it was a massive success here. Yes, there was a lot of people in town. Some stuff happened. For us living here, it might have not been extremely convenient, but it was way better than F1, and there was a lot of people having a really good time. I want to ask you about the handle when we come back.
It will be amazing. Listen, we're going to talk more about just overall final thoughts here of the Super Bowl, preview the AFC. We're going to talk about the NFC a little bit later as well. See if there's any bets actually to be made here this early on. It's a numbers game here on a Tuesday.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Hey, you've got a computer and a mobile phone. Go into the browser of choice and type in VSiN.com, VSIN.com. You're going to see a fresh new look. You're going to get enhanced navigation, a mobile-first focus if you are on that cell phone of yours. The functionality is better. The site works better. You go in, you can get some educational content if you were kind of dipping your toe in here to this sports betting stuff. Of course, all of the other nooks and crannies of the site are still there that you love from the previous version. Go in, VSiN.com, VSIN, and check out everything the team work so hard to bring to you here behind the scenes. Matt Brown, Kelly Bidlin coming to you here on a numbers game in for Gil. Well-deserved vacation for my friend, and he will be back here with you in a couple weeks. So going to be with you till the end of the week. And Kelly, we talked about as we were kind of heading out here on just the amount of popularity, not only of this Super Bowl, but how much it was bet here in the state of Nevada as well. And again, the books win again. The books have had two losing years ever in on the Super Bowl, and so this will continue to get, you know, keep on with that winning.
And if you don't win or lose on a year like this, wow! Like, you went to overtime, Chiefs get home, all that good stuff. Mahomes MVP, like, wow!
Yeah,
that is pretty wild. I do want to ask you about the handle with it. With because game was here, we saw record handle here, but where Nevada's coming in these days, what, like 10th in the country as far as overall, overall handle for sports betting? Do you viewership? You should always expect to continue to increase when you talk about the Super Bowl. Betting handle here in Nevada, how do you see that going forward?
Yeah, I mean, it's always going to be, though, an event place. That's the difference between the tentpole events are always going to pull here. So even though you can bet in Arizona and Colorado and all these other places that are bordering us, what you can't do is kind of what we were talking about is why Las Vegas is so great for the Super Bowl and to host it in the first place, which is what you can't do is just walk up and down the strip and walk into, 20 different five diamond restaurants and three different nightclubs and all of the different shows and all that. So like the Super Bowl, March Madness, all those, like those big time sporting events are always going to draw here in Vegas. So it didn't surprise me to see the handle tick up a little bit. I actually think it's a win just in general whenever you look at it, because I think the event, me personally, that the event here doesn't necessarily affect materially the amount of money bet here on the Super Bowl, because like I said, it's always a destination for the Super Bowl no matter what. And you could make an argument that the fans that are coming here for the Chiefs and the fans that are coming here for the Niners are coming here because they're fans, not because they're gamblers, right? So right. like you could almost make a counter argument that the game being here should almost negatively affect the betting handle, because the people who are influxing when the game is not here are people who are interested in staying at a casino and having that experience of watching the Super Bowl in a gaming environment, and most likely going to go gamble. We had a lot of people who were just fans of the teams.
Yeah, you had a lot of people chewing up hotel rooms that are just here to literally watch.
Yeah, like there are people who are just fans of the teams that came and wanted to just be a part of all the hoopla around their team. If they didn't, even if they didn't go to the game in general, I talked to several different people, and this is anecdotally for me, but I talked to several different people who were just here to watch the game. Yeah, like just they just wanted to be in the mix, right? And they're like, well, what better place to be in the mix, even if I can't go to the game, than Las Vegas, you know? So I think anything is a win for sure. And like you said, the fact that there was actually a profit made is pretty big too, because like you said, I mean, this went
wild
with, you know, the overtime game, getting so many of the props home, which we know would have been so good for them if some of those didn't get home, with Mahomes winning MVP, which he was heading right down a path to not, and all that. Yeah. It just lets you know. I mean, that's why they open up these menus as big as they do. It's why they take as many of the bets as they do, because if you spread it out enough, there will be enough bet to where they're going to be on the good side of it. And it's just, it really is shocking to me, though, to see, again, a tick up, considering we do have all these bordering states and now 30 plus states where you can actually bet legally. You don't have to come here to do it. You don't have to come here to do it anymore. So let's take a look here at the AFC. Of course, the Chiefs do win the Super Bowl, and we want to know, like, you know, they're your favorite to repeat, and is that rightfully so? Listen, there are two very big free agents on that defense. We know that defense was what kind of kept them going all season long, as you can see on your screen right here. To win the AFC, 4-1 are the Chiefs, 475 on the Bills, 475 on the Ravens, 7-1 on Cincinnati, 9.5 on the Miami Dolphins, 12-1 on the Texans, 13 on the Chargers, Jets at 14, Jags at 17, and then the Browns at 20 kind of make up the ones that I think you would realistically maybe want to put a ticket in on. You look at the Chiefs, Chris Jones, Legarius Sneed, both going to be free agents. They're going to, if they can't work out a deal with Sneed, they'll tag him. So Sneed's not going to go anywhere. Sneed will at least be there for another season. But Chris Jones, in theory, could walk. He held out. He got that money. He's going to want more money. They were hesitant to pay him the money the first time. And now, I mean, he's probably going to want upper 20s, maybe even pushing 30. The problem is he's on the wrong side of 30 now at this point. So the Chiefs, I don't know. I mean, we saw with Tyreek Hill, right? There was a threshold of money they were willing to pay Tyreek Hill. And then when it became too much, they had to get rid of him. That's just how this organization functions. I don't know if, given the fact that I think they're going to want to hold on to Sneed, even if they have to tag him, they'll probably want to sign him to a deal. And so then you kind of go, can we afford to pay Chris Jones $28 million a year, $29 million a year? This is a guy that has does a ton on the defensive line, ton on the defensive side of the ball. I'm not saying that makes them not the favorite. I wouldn't say, but what I will say is it is a huge, huge loss, and something that would certainly at least play into your handicap if you're trying to figure out what you're going to get from the Chiefs next year, who relied so heavily on this defense.
Yeah, they really did. It really is. It's a different conversation this year with that, with all that going on. And like you said, I think the Tyreek thing is big. It does carry over here. Like, that is going to be a big number that you're going to have to give out to Chris Jones. I don't know if they're going to do it. It's going to be interesting to see this run this back. I mean, I think you would expect the weapons, no matter what moves they make, you know, whether it's in the draft, free agency, whatever, I think you would expect a little bit better of an offensive weapons around Patrick Mahomes next year. But man, you just saw it. Having Patrick Mahomes in a defense this good was good enough to get you to a Super Bowl and to win a Super Bowl. So it's going to be interesting to see how they make those decisions on the defensive side of the ball. Can't imagine Sneed going anywhere. No. I'm with you on that one. Like, he is too good.
They'll franchise him. They'll franchise him even if they can get a long-term deal worked out, and then they'll just kick the can down the road and try to get it done, I imagine, after that. Yeah, I mean, the consensus is that the Chiefs are going to be in the wide receiver market. The thing just comes down to there are several teams that need a playmaker and need a wide receiver, and the top few guys are going to be getting a ton of offers, and they're going to be getting a ton of money. And it's like, so are the Chiefs willing to come in and spend the type of money that it might take to get a T. Higgins or a Mike Evans or something like that? Because, you know, a Michael Pittman even, because it seems like maybe the Colts are willing to move on from him if they can get one of these other guys, you know? So it's like there's all of that that's going on, you know, with that. The Bills need a playmaker for sure. You look outside of Steph Diggs. So you have a Bills team who, by the way, is again second in the betting odds right now, plus 475, but they need a playmaker at wide receiver. You get the Ravens, and like, it's just that team where you look at them and he's like, they're probably going to go and win another 11, 12 games in the regular season and let us down in the playoffs again. Like, there's something about the makeup of them that I just don't. I mean, you could argue they would want to. I mean, they went and paid Odell because they thought they needed a playmaker wide receiver. Odell's going to walk, and so do they go and try to be aggressive? So there's that. You get Burrow back for Cincinnati. That plays into everything. I mean, there's just a lot going on over there in the AFC. It's going to be tough. And no, oh, by the way, Harbaugh with the Chargers. So he's over there. Aaron Rodgers returns for the Jets. The Texans made a ton of leaps and strides this year. I mean, it's going to be hard for the Chiefs to repeat. I think that they're probably the rightful favorite here, but I think it's going to be very difficult for them to repeat.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. And, you know, just looking at the AFC, it does feel like a couple teams are being forgotten a little bit. Like, you know, hey, Joe Burrow is going to be returning. You got Bengals at 7-1 compared to, you know, that bunch at 4-1 plus 475 for Chiefs, and then Bills and Ravens. Feels like a little bit of a too big of a gap to me between Bills and Ravens down to the Bengals. And then, I mean, I wasn't crazy high on this team last year, but where these numbers have drifted to, like the Jets number, like that's getting pretty long.
Yeah, 14-1 on them to win the AFC.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking 14-1 there. You're in the 20s for a Super Bowl price on them. I mean, Rodgers is going to be coming back here. That team, I mean, that AFC East is going to be brutal, obviously, with the Bills and Dolphins. I don't expect the Dolphins to take a huge step backwards by any means, but that Jets team should be right there too. So it's going to be really interesting to see how all this plays out next year.
Steelers dump Trubisky. They say they're going to be open quarterback like market. Do they go after a Justin Fields, or do they do a retread with kind of like Ryan Tannehill, who played for Art Smith? And so you would have that kind of reuniting thing going on there. Art Smith, of course, the new OC over with the Steelers. The Dolphins defense, which kind of became a liability, Vic Fangio leaves. So now they bring in Anthony Weaver, who came over serving the defensive line coach for the Ravens. So does that affect the Ravens defense? I mean, there's a lot here in all these chess pieces. I'm with you. I think if you look at the most attractive bet on there, maybe just because the numbers drifted a little bit, because out of sight, out of mind, Cincinnati at 7-1, you're getting back one of the top five quarterbacks in the NFL. And if you get back one of the top five quarterbacks in the NFL, pretty good situation to be in for them. So 7-1 is fairly interesting on that team. I'm not quite there on the Chargers just yet. We'll see what Drew Densick thinks. Maybe he has some opinions coming up next year on a numbers game.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Are you not a VSiN Pro subscriber quite yet? Do you want to come in and see what we all have going on over there? You can get in for $9.99. It's an introductory offer. You get that daily best bets email. You get access to the betting splits. You get the betting guide for March Madness that is coming up. You can get that again for just $9.99, VSiN.com/subscribe. Matt Brown, Kelly Bidlin in for Gil here. And Kelly, a little bit of information coming in. The Chiefs' overtime plan worked out exactly as they had hoped for. It wasn't by accident. Kansas City safety Justin Reed told The Ringer that the Chiefs had first discussed the new overtime rules as far back as training camp. Defensive lineman Chris Jones told the players were prepared for what to expect if Super Bowl went to overtime. We talked through it for 2 weeks, Jones said, how we were going to give the ball to the opponent, and if they score, we were going to go for two at the end of the game. We rehearsed it.
Yeah, your thoughts on the whole overtime ordeal? We heard that from the Chiefs players, and then Kyle Juszczyk still trying to figure out what's going on in overtime.
Yeah, it's so I think what you're... You know, whether you believe him or not, we're not going to have that debate, because it's like, you know, Whether they'd have gone for it or not, we don't know. But, like, that's what they say they would have. Sure. I mean, that was instantly what Mahomes said afterwards. That is, now we're getting the Justin Reed, Chris, all of them saying that. So the whole we wanted the third possession thing is kind of like null and void. I don't think that argument really plays out if you're the 49ers, because if you believe, again, that they were honestly going to go for two because they didn't want to give the ball back to the 49ers. I kind of believe with the rule the way that it is, you want to be in control of whether you win or lose the Super Bowl, you know, because, I mean, you don't want to lose on a 58-yard field goal, because then at that point, the next score would have won.
Right.
So it's like, could you imagine getting to overtime in the Super Bowl and you lose because a guy had like a 58-yard field goal and then like that's it? That's how you lose the Super Bowl? Like, probably not, you know?
It would suck. It would suck.
Yeah, so you probably want the control of that.
I still love the rule change, though. Like, what also sucks is one team having the ball going down and scoring and the whole game's over. Like, I loved the chaos of that, honestly. I really did. I think it's a great new rule that we've added.
Let's ask Drew Dinsick what he thinks about it. You can find him over at NBC Sports Bet. You can find him on the Twitter machine at @whale_capper. Drew, did you know all of the overtime rules? Were you 100% apprised of how this was going to go down?
Oh, yeah, without question. You know, you have to kind of be aware of them if you're betting playoff football, because the amount of total points available in the overtime is now 22, which changes the potential distribution of points scored in the playoffs. And the fact that we had our first overtime game with the new rules and we still didn't get a total over is kind of funny. It was an interesting, you know, to see how it played out and see the decision making of the coaches. And I know there's been a lot of criticism lobbed because people think they know pretty surely what the right thing to do is one way or the other. And I think it's probably foolish to say that you have certainty that taking it or electing to kick is surely plus EV. I think it was it was probably a fine decision when it's all said and done. And I think the decision that's not really coming under much scrutiny, where I would have been a little bit more aggressive, would have been on 4th and 4, electing for the short field goal there when you were driving pretty effectively on that Chiefs defense, was pretty surprising. You know, when you elect to kick the field goal in overtime to go up 22-19, you are putting a lot of faith on your defense to come up with a 4-down stop. You have taken, you know, and there's a lot of people who are using kind of conversation about, taking the decision into your own hands versus putting it in your opponent's, blah, 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 blah. Well, when you're up 3 and you hand your opponent the ball in a sudden death scenario, you have predetermined for them that they are in 4-down territory, which means your defense is going to need to come up with a 4-down stop before allowing their opponent to get a field goal try. And while that was generally successful for the Niners for a lot of the balance of the game, they were excellent defense in the red zone for most of that contest. You are forcing your opponent to go for it on 4th down. Whereas if you go for it on 4th down, do not convert, you have the Chiefs relatively pinned, and you have the Chiefs in a defensive position where they're not going to go for it on 4th down. The 4th and 1 that they converted with the Pat Mahomes scramble, that really kind of got that drive going. That doesn't happen. The Chiefs punt there. And so it's a little, kind of lost in the looking back and, you know, knowing what happened in hindsight. But, I would have expected that as successful as you had been on that drive against that Chiefs defense, that going for it on 4th and 4 would not have been out of the question at all. And, you know, Shanahan is, if you have confidence in the plays you have cooked up, you don't have the play that you need to get those 4 yards to set up a goal to go opportunity, then, I don't know what you're, I don't really know what else you expected. So, I'm a bitter Niners backer here. So there's a lot of, coulda, shoulda, woulda about this game.
Yeah.
The overtime period itself was, the third down play in particular was painful before the field goal attempt. As you go into regulation, the decision making around the 2-minute warning and really the key play on third down on third down out of the 2 minute warning will haunt me and Kyle and everyone else who was pretty hopeful the Niners were going to win in this one. So there were somewhere in the ballpark of 8 self-inflicted wounds by the Niners in this game that made it closer than it should have. And if you kind of play a cleaner game from start to finish here, it's a multiple score win for the Niners, and the Chiefs don't really have the opportunity to give Mahomes the chance to steal the win. And because of the, self-inflicted wounds, it's a game, and Mahomes can be the hero, and history is written that way. So it was a tough outcome altogether, but you can't really ask for a more entertaining football game, I don't think.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, listen, even though I was on the Chiefs side of things, I actually came out of this game, I was at least happy that it wasn't one of the things where we could just sit there and then point and go like, well, Purdy's there it is. The game's too big for Purdy. And that's the reason why I'm actually glad we come out of it. And it's not just like, oh, everything was Purdy's fault. And then all the narratives leading in just played exactly out that the game was too big for him. And he was getting away with stuff all season long, and all those turnover worthy plays were going to come back to haunt him in the Super Bowl against his Chiefs vaunted defense and all that. So I'm actually kind of glad, even though, other factors did play into it, special teams, of course, and all that, that went awry. But I'm glad that there wasn't just like one scapegoat here for this game, because like you said, I think it would have taken away from it a little bit.
Could I agree with you more? If the discourse coming out of it was all about Brock Purdy, I would have been pretty disappointed. The actual kind of crazy thing, and I'm sure this has been covered, you guys may have even already talked about it, but the Chiefs' ability to recover fumbles in these two Super Bowls against the Niners is kind of an absurd. The fumble recovery stuff, I mean, maybe we don't really kind of treat fumble luck, maybe we're treating it as luck when it's not really. I don't really know. I mean, obviously one of the things that made Brady and the Belichick run so effective was they just never lost fumbles. The Chiefs having 5 fumbles and recovering, they had 6 fumbles and they recovered 5 of them. And the Niners having 2 and losing both is pretty unbelievable. And, those 2 lost fumbles swung at least 10 points in this game for the Niners, if not 14. Whereas the Chiefs lost fumbles, that took points off the boards for them, surely. But the ones that they recovered were monumentally huge. So, it was a weird, fluky game ultimately. And I think if you want to just kind of say, well, was there one handicapping angle that kind of stood above the rest that people should have kind of seen coming, or, as I reflect on it, what I should have seen coming. And I guess I was a little bit quick to dismiss the impact of experience for the Chiefs. The fact that these guys played in this game last year as a group, the fact that Mahomes has played in as many, many high leverage games and as many high leverage moments as possible, and has done so well in this moments, I think was pretty telling. And I don't think that's a false narrative there. So, ultimately the Chiefs being the more experienced team and having less mistakes and being less rattled and being more cool in the high leverage moments. I mean, I think all that made the difference in the end.
All right, Drew, we got about 30 seconds here. 49ers open as the favorite for next year. The Chiefs right behind them, and then a pretty big gap to the Ravens and the Bills and the Lions. Rightfully so in the Niners and Chiefs. I mean, does it look like they're going to be the best 2 teams in your opinion?
I'm fine with that, but I also think that the road to back to the Super Bowl is probably easier for the Chiefs than the Niners at this point. And I know the AFC is pretty, is pretty stacked with elite quarterbacks. But I think the fact that the Packers and the Rams come back into the mix here with even better, and the Cowboys are still a factor, makes it, it's going to make it tougher for the Niners to get back to the Chiefs, in my opinion.
Find him over at NBC Sports Bet on the Twitter machine at @whale_capper. He is Drew Densick. Thanks for the time this morning, my man.
Hey, best luck, guys.
Come back, talk a little bit more about the AFC and some NFC preview as well.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
You're driving along, you just dropped little Susie off at kindergarten. Well, it's worth pulling over for this offer. You're in the long haul trucker, you're heading down I-20 right now. We'll just go ahead and find you a truck stop, because if you are a new customer for DraftKings Sportsbook, you can go in. If you use the promo code VSIN, You can get a no sweat bet up to $1,000 should you lose your first bet. You only want to deposit $500, you will get a no sweat bet up to $500 if you lose that first bet. So again, take advantage of this offer. Go in, use the promo code VSIN, V-S-I-N, and you can get a no sweat bet up to $1,000 matching your first deposit should you lose that first bet. It is worth it. Go ahead, pull over, anger the people in traffic. It's okay. Don't do it while you're driving. Safety first, Kelly, always. Safety first.
That's right, yes.
Safety first here on a Numbers Game.
That's right.
Numbers Game, Matt Brown, Kelly Bidlin, in for Gil here for the next few days. Drew, you could tell Drew was unhappy with the result of the game. He was not happy with the result of that game.
Pretty sure he was in Hawaii. I'm not feeling that bad for him, Matt.
Not feeling.
Yeah, he was on the Niners. I don't know how the rest of his prop bets went, but yeah, I know he was on the Niners side.
Yeah, it is on the NFC side of things. It is a little bit interesting. So you see the 49ers, as we mentioned, the 49ers are your favorite to win the entire Super Bowl. But even on the NFC side, the number obviously even shorter, plus 225 for them to win the NFC. Lions at 550, Eagles at 8-1, the Cowboys also at 8-1, Packers at 10-1, Bears at 14, Falcons at 14, Rams at 15, Vikings with who knows who at quarterback 20. The Bucks, they're going to re-sign Baker Mayfield. They're going to lose Mike Evans. That will see 30-1. Seahawks 30-1 as well. Saints 40, Cardinals 50, Commanders 60. Giants 60, and then the Panthers at 130-1 to win the conference.
You don't see Kirk Cousins go back there?
I do, but the problem is he's not going to be ready for the beginning of the season. So it's like, you know, what if he can't make it back until week six and they start 0-5? I mean, I get you can in theory come back from that, but
yeah,
it could be rough for them, for sure.
Real quick, just general betting stuff this time around. We're talking about these because, yes, we just had the Super Bowl, and these markets are getting released, and this stuff gets released, you know, earlier and earlier every single year. DraftKings doing a great job throwing a bunch of NFL stuff up right now. If you're betting something like this right now, A, do you? B, if you are, is there a certain strategy you're looking at?
Yeah, you have to be betting on the come. Essentially, for me. So the Niners are not bettable because if anything, the Niners could only get worse, probably, you know, and a preseason injury. Because, like, they're not going to be super aggressive in free agency. There's just the team is who the team is. I mean, like, they're just going to be what they are. I mean, they might make a vanity pickup here and there or a depth pickup or something. But, like, you've got your receivers. You've got the guys on the defense. You got your quarterback, like. There's no spy. It seems like they could only have something bad happen to them, which would be some sort of major injury in training camp or something. Like a team that would be ripe for like betting on the come essentially would be like the Falcons, right? So if you believed that the Falcons are just a quarterback away, given what they have on the playmaker side, on the offensive side of the ball, if the coaching change means a ton to you, if the fact that they play in such a weak division, because that's the other thing about this, right? You only have to get in the tournament to have a chance to win the conference. And so you play in the NFC South that is going to have the Saints that are going to be bad, the Panthers that are going to be bad, and could it be just a head-to-head between you and the Bucs? And the Bucs could get materially worse, too, if Mike Evans ends up leaving town. Maybe some of these guys on the defensive side of the ball end up either leaving as well or retiring. So, you know, the Falcons at 14 are not going to be 14 if they make a move at quarterback. They've been linked to Justin Fields, but now we're getting the Steelers linked to Justin Fields. We're getting a whole bunch of teams that are linked to Justin Fields. And I guess, you know, I would ask you, the Falcons, given the fact you've got Bijan Robinson and you've got Drake London and you've got Kyle Pitts on the offensive side of the ball, on the defensive side of the ball, they go and they get Bates last offseason and turned into a fairly decent defense. I mean, all season long, they were in the upper half of the NFL in pretty much every single statistical category. They just couldn't get anything going on the offensive side of the ball at quarterback at all. You know exactly the glaring problem with this team. And so, again, if they were to go get a Justin Fields in a trade or something, the 14-1 would evaporate. So you're basically, in my opinion, you're just betting on a team on the come.
Yep. Yeah, I agree with that. And this is, you know, and or just longer shot teams that you think are going to take money, going to be bet into between now and when the season actually kicks off. But usually usually not often am I tying up my money for the for this long in markets like this. But yes, it's I think the Falcons is probably a great example of a team that, okay, yeah, they do something to quarterback. Those odds get chopped, you know, maybe in half if they actually bring in someone decent. Yeah, I think those are the ones to look out for. But yeah, there's no reason to rush to get your money involved right now.
I don't think so. I mean, the only other thing is, and it's not saying that this is necessarily bettable today because I don't think you'll have to, but I do wonder if the pendulum has swung too far on the Eagles at this point. I mean, it is now a team that is way behind the 49ers in the odds board, a decent bit behind the Lions in the odds board, sitting at 8-1 behind the +225 Niners and the +550 Lions. And the Eagles were in everybody's top five of the power ratings for the vast majority of the season. Like, yes, they fell off at the end, but for 14 weeks, they were in everybody's top five as far as power ratings go. And you get Vic Fangio to come in now as defensive coordinator, where the whole problem was the defense, you know. And so I just wonder if, because of how things ended for the Eagles, if we've swung too far in the opposite. They still have Jalen Hurts,
right,
and they still have A.J. Brown, and they still have Devonta Smith, and they, you know, they're going to have a lot of people. I mean, yeah, Kelsey might retire, but I mean, that's about it.
Yeah, I mean, first reaction is just seeing off these odds. Yeah, like Niners feel a little short. I completely agree with you on the Eagles. This, it just feels like we're starting to overreact a bit. Yeah. To I know it sounds bad because I know it was not a great season for the Eagles, but yes, I think we're overreacting a little bit to how their season ended up finishing.
Think about it this way. They were pretty much the nut low defense in the NFL over the last 6 weeks of this. So like, it can only get better.
Right.
And it was a team, and again, it was a team that won still despite the fact that the defense was so terrible for the longest time over the course of the year, and then finally just caught up to them with how bad it was. So it can only get better if you believe in Vic Fangio and you think that he is actually one of the best defensive coordinators in the NFL, which most people do. A lot of people out there in the industry do. Then again, it can only get better. I'm not saying you got to go bet the 8-1, but it does seem like we're maybe disrespecting this squad just a tad.
Yeah, I agree. Cowboys price feels accurate to me. I want to go back to one of the comments that Drew dropped about the NFC, thought being stronger this next season and up there with the AFC. I don't know if I'm fully there yet. I don't know if this NFC crop I expect to be as competitive as the top of the AFC, but do you see teams like Packers, Rams, maybe a Falcons like that really jumping up there?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you look at it, I like the Falcons a decent bit if they can find a quarterback, because it part of the handicap plays in the fact that it's going to be a much easier path for them to win the division too, right? Like, you're not even having to bank on them. It's like, well, you know, they might have to sneak in through a wild card because blah, blah, blah. Like, nah, man. Like, the Lions at 550, the Packers are going to be good next year. Like, I don't think it's just a given that the Lions are going to win that division. I think the Packers, from what we saw from Love at the end of the year and getting all of those contributions from those young wide receivers now with a year more under their belt, I think the Packers could be fairly dangerous. I don't think the Rams.
Well, even that, like, Christian Watson, how many games did he miss again this year? Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, we're so excited about a guy like that, and it felt like he barely was on the field this year.
So you had a healthy Matt Stafford. You get this emergence of Puka Nacua. Cooper Kupp's going to be a year removed from coming back off of injury, so he should look more like himself this past year. You got Kyron Williams at running back, and then the defense, which I thought was going to be atrocious heading into the season, actually ended up being league average. If they can take a step forward, I don't think the Rams are crazy either, you know? So it is fairly interesting. I think the Seahawks are limited just by Geno Smith. I don't know if they try to do anything at quarterback or not, but, you know, Geno Smith, there's just a ceiling for Geno Smith that is just not very high.
Yeah, I think we saw that ceiling, you know, a season ago, right? It was an incredible story, incredible comeback.
Right, good on him.
Not everybody's Patrick Mahomes. Got him paid. Not everybody is Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah, got him paid. Everything was, you know, working out in kind of running pure for them, but that's about it.
Those Bears odds feel a little short, too. I mean, like, what are we
expecting? It's going to be a rookie quarterback.
Yeah, it's going to be a rookie quarterback. I don't really know what we're expecting there. Yeah, like, I mean, those should be double that. At least.
I mean, it's going to be a rookie quarterback. He's not saying it can't be done, but like, Come on. It's very unlikely.
I would be betting on the Bucks before I bet the Bears. Yeah, even if it's the same number. If you gave me the same number.
I'd be betting on a bunch of the teams that are below them than I would the Bears. So, yeah, rookie quarterback. It's just, it is what it is. It's a rookie quarterback. Sorry. If you're watching us on DK Network, thanks. Appreciate that. Dan Le Batard coming up next over on VSiN. We'll talk some college basketball with Kye McKeon. Stick around. It's a numbers game here on Tuesday.